everybody, to Practical Living. We have great tips for you that you don't want to miss. Have your paper and pen ready so that you can write down whatever it is that you don't want to forget. We have practical matters, practical health, and much more. But before we go any further, let's ponder our practical thought.
Thanks, Andriette. Our practical thought for today comes from Theodore N. Vail. It says, real difficulties can be overcome. It is only the imaginary ones that are unconquerable. So whatever your difficulty you're facing, remember, it can be overcome. But the ones that we think are there, which really aren't, those are the hard ones to overcome. Okay, let's now switch over to Practical Matters.
Welcome to Practical Matters. I hope you fastened your seatbelt for this next segment. We're going to be talking about something that's also to do with relationships. Now, we've been speaking about why we get into relationships, how it affects us at puberty. Now, we've been talking about that, this whole idea of not giving into our feelings, not just acting on our impulses, because it won't benefit us later on in life. And a lot of it has to do with not having sex before marriage. Now, even myself, as a young person, you've gotten this idea that sex is wrong and that it's completely an unholy thing. So could you please give us some light on that topic?
Sex is not wrong. People who are religious will know that we are created by God.
Mm-hmm.
And if He created us, then He created sex as well. That's how people have kids. Now, He did not create anything wrong. Mm-hmm. He didn't create it as something sinful. So sex in and of itself is not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Sex in and of itself is not sinful. Sex in and of itself is not unholy. It is something that was created by God. It's something that is natural. Every community on earth celebrates sex in various ways.
Mm-hmm.
When children are born, we are glad. And even though we may tell kids that some stork brought them or we picked them under a bridge or some frog did something, the bottom line is this: we feel good when kids are born. And we all know it didn't happen because people shook hands.
Yes.
All know they didn't just look at each other intensely and boom, there was pregnancy. We all know it happens through sex. It's just that every community, whether it's religious or not, every community has always had a place for sex.
Mm.
Before you even bring in the concept of religion, every community says sex belongs in marriage. That's what every community believes. And every religion goes along with that. Sex belongs in marriage. So the idea of it being bad, the idea of it being wrong and it being unholy only comes when we talk about when you do it.
Yes.
When you do it outside of marriage, yes, it becomes wrong. But it's not the sex that's wrong. It's the fact that you're doing it out of marriage.
Yes.
When you're doing it as two young single people, yes, it is bad. Yes, it is wrong. And this is what people object to. And all the negative stuff that you hear about sex is all based on it being done in the wrong place, it being done at the wrong time. That's what's bad. So when parents speak against sex, it's not like they're saying never, ever have sex. Because when you get married and they discover you're not having sex with your husband and your wife, they will reprimand you. Yes, something is wrong. So it's not like anyone is saying don't ever have sex. It's that we are saying have sex, but have sex when you're married. Don't have sex now before you get married, because it's not a right time for you to have sex.
Yes.
So it in and of itself is not wrong. It's good. So I don't want anyone out there to be thinking sex is bad. Sex is not bad. Sex is good. But if you're having sex before you're married, yes, that is bad. That is wrong. And you know that it is. You don't even need me to come up and quote something. You know it is. That's how you were brought up. That's, if you are religious, that's what you were taught as part of your religious education. So if that's how, what you would, that you know that's how your parents feel. So it's not something, you don't need to be convinced by me. Deep down you know. It's just that you may do it because you feel times have changed. You may do it because you feel your parents don't understand, your community doesn't understand, your religion doesn't understand. You do it because other people are doing it. You do it because it's done on TV. You do it because it's normal. But bottom line, deep down you know it's not right. You should not be doing it. And now you know the reason why it's always had those negative vibes.
Yes. And
wrong
I mean,
time.
Even if you want to use the excuse that times have changed, people are still people. And that's babies true. Are still babies. They haven't changed to have now 3 feet instead of two or whatever the case may be. We are still exactly the same with the same emotions. Same God.
That is true.
He does not change.
And our values have not changed in our communities. No. This is the funny thing, that even though times have changed, yes, we have new technology, but our value is still the same.
Yes.
In communities where you may find that it seems to be acceptable, it's because parents have given up. They have a sense that they cannot control this thing. Some people will say, look, you can't stop these kids from having sex, so why try? So just because people have given up does not mean it's right.
Yes.
The same applies to crime. You'll get to a place where it has such a high crime rate. People have given up. They've accepted it. They're inside their homes at 5 o'clock. 5 o'clock, they're already inside their homes. Why? Because they've accepted that their area is dangerous. They don't want it to be dangerous.
Mm.
It's not the right thing that their areas are dangerous. They've just accepted that their areas are dangerous and they live with it. Same applies with sex. Just because we've given up on the fact that people are having sex doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. Our values haven't changed.
Yeah. No, our values haven't changed at all.
Mm-hmm.
We're still the same people. And but now, if we say that... That sex is right and all these things. How do we explain to our children that it's comes at a certain time? When is that time?
When you're married.
Is that it?
That's it.
Not a given, not up for grabs, nothing?
It's after you get married. Every community will tell you that. Every religion will tell you that. So anyone who's going to speak on that will say that.
Mm-hmm.
The only one who's going to disagree is the person doing a movie where they fall in love and they have sex. Yes. Why? Because it has to be romantic. It has to be good. It has to sell money and so on and so forth. It has to make money. But generally, if we'll talk about in coming programs why we would go the route of saying only in marriage.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I'm looking forward to this next session. We're going to be saying that what are some of the negative consequences. But just quickly, what about this theory of test driving a car before you buy it?
Nobody actually does that in real life. Sex is such a small fraction of married life that you can never actually say because you've slept with someone you know that they're going to make a good wife. In any given week, if you spend literally more than 5 hours having sex out of the entire 7 days, that's a lot of time having sex. But what happens with the rest of the time? You're not having sex. And having sex to check if this person is going to be a good spouse doesn't prepare you. How do you know if you can get along with this person? Sex doesn't help you determine the person's values, doesn't help you see if you can be happy with the person, doesn't give you an idea of the kind of parent this person would be. It doesn't tell you how the person spends money, how they spend their free time. It doesn't. So to have sex with someone under the guise that you're test driving is not true. Even when you are test driving a car, you don't go and smash the car to check if the airbags work.
Yes.
Nobody does that. So it's just an excuse to have sex.
Yes.
It's just an excuse to have sex where you say you need to test drive before you get married. No such thing. It doesn't exist. If someone wants to test drive you, they don't want to marry you. They just want to have sex with you. And that's it.
Well, thank you very much. And be sure to join us for the next session. Same time, same place.
Have you heard something on our broadcast that you need further clarification on? Is there an issue that you would like addressed? Do you want to greet your brothers and sisters that also listen to us? Write to us. Our mailing address is AWR, P.O. Box 22, Somerset West, 7129, South Africa. That is AWR, P.O. Box 22, Somerset West, 7129, South Africa. You can also email us using awr@sidmedia.org. That is awr@sidmedia.org.
Don't change the station. Still to come on Practical Living is Practical Bible and some music. But next up is Practical Health.
Hello and welcome to another segment of Practical Health. Today we're going to be discussing a very interesting subject. We're going to be discussing intellectual health. In the studio with me to discuss the subject is Rochelle.
Hi.
How are you, Rochelle?
I'm fine. Thank you, Don.
Thank you. Intellectual health, you know, it's a new subject to me. I know people speak about intelligence and all kinds of things, but I've never really been keen to understand more on intellectual health. Can you please enlighten us more on that subject?
Well, Don, intellectual health would refer to our ability to successfully process and act upon the information that we have received from the outside world. For instance, what you learn at school, what you take in through your senses, your five senses, your eyes and your ears and your sense of smell and taste. How are you acting upon it, you know? Our ability to process and act upon that. Is it satisfactory, or is it under the average, or is it, you know?
Okay. When you say, is it satisfactory, like, I mean, when I was at school, I was a bit slow in terms of processing things. Even now at times, I forget a lot of things. So does that mean that perhaps my intellectual health is not in good shape? Or what does that mean? Is it like specific to culture, heredity, you know, things like that?
You know
that?
What? It's interesting, Don. Scientists have discovered that it's not the amount of brain cells that we have that determine our intelligence, but the connections between them. And that gives us all hope because, you know, I actually heard a very beautiful explanation of why God sometimes allows children that are misformed and whatever the case may be. And somebody explained it this way. They said, God takes that which we give him at that moment. For instance, a girl being raped or drug users, you know, and this lady is pregnant now, and he makes the best what he can with what he has at that moment. And so God is not going to be unfair to the person that has less brain cells because of what their parents did, but he is still going to allow all of us the opportunity to acquire great intelligence and to be the best that we can within our own skin. And so the less or the shorter the connections between each neuron, each brain cell are, the quicker a thought is. For instance, if you're reasoning from cause to effect about a particular thing, if there are much shorter connections between each brain cell for a particular thought process, then you would reach the answer, let's say, to a question much quicker. And that can be improved by our lifestyle, literally the things that we eat and do, but also through other techniques like, memory techniques that we can acquire.
Yeah, speaking about memory, you know, I sometimes struggle to memorize things. So perhaps in the future we can actually share with
yes,
the viewers
that
some,
will
some
be,
of the techniques of how to memorize things.
That will be, it's very interesting. Most of those, most of the things that you can do to improve your memory are not necessarily the learning techniques. It's lifestyle, what you eat and what you do.
So in essence, what you're saying is that if you, even though your connections might not be so good, you can actually improve.
Yes, you can improve your memory.
Your memory.
Yes. And as with muscles, they are strengthened and grown by exercise, so the brain. If you're going to keep your brain active, you will stay young in a mental sense. You get, you know, sometimes it's, we have one of our counselors at the Lifestyle Center. She is a dear old lady. She's, well, I wouldn't actually say old, because if you'd see her, you wouldn't, you know, you'd wonder what is her age. She is 71 years old, and she outworks us young girls over there. And so if you keep your mind exercised, you can really choose to be as old as you want to be.
Speaking about that, I actually listened to one of the pastors he was presenting on health, and he was speaking about how people can avoid Alzheimer's disease. And one of the things he actually highlighted was that if you continue to learn new things, even in your old age, you actually improve your chances of not getting Alzheimer's disease. And I found that very interesting because for most people, they get to a certain point where they just think, you know, it's not important to gain knowledge anymore. It's not important to learn. So they kind of give up on their brain in a sense. You know, they just think, I'm too old for this. So I suppose to those such people, we'd actually recommend them to continue acquiring knowledge and learning new things every
day. We know that some diseases there are no medical cure for Alzheimer's disease. But you can adapt your lifestyle and keep your mind young by keep training your brain. And it's important. I don't think a lot of people realize how important it is to remain in that learning state, to never grow tired of learning.
And what can you say about the ability to express and, you know, comprehend, like how sometimes we struggle to express ourselves and to understand certain material, you know, is...
Well, that is a growing process. As we grow up, we make mistakes and we learn from our mistakes. For instance, if I inadequately express my disapproval of somebody's actions, they might have a reaction that would cause me to take offense. And by learning and analyzing our own behavior, our own words, what we said and what they then said, God has given us this wonderful ability to reason from cause to effect. So we can take a scenario, look at what we might have done wrong, and ask ourselves the question, what if I said it a better way? What if I said it in a more non-threatening way? For instance, if I say, you did this and this and this, you are going to cause that other person to take offense more. It's more within our nature to take offense then. Whereas if you say that which you did made me feel, when you're placing the emphasis and the focus on yourself, you're taking the threatening factor away, and then that person is less likely to attack, if we can call it that. So that's also part of intellectual intelligence, which can also be with in the social intelligence section.
Okay, that is very interesting. Thank you kindly, Rochelle, for sharing this information with us, and I'm sure it helped our listeners as well to actually aspire to be more intellectually healthy and to try and find methods of how to keep themselves learning and, you know, eat more healthier food to get their brain cells growing. And I think I've also gained a lot from this show. I'd like to thank you so much for coming to the studio.
It's a pleasure.
We meet you again, listeners, tomorrow. Thank you for joining us. That was a great show.
Have you heard something on our broadcast that you need further clarification on? Is there an issue you would like to be addressed? Do you want to greet your brothers and sisters that also listen to us? Write to us. Our mailing address is AWR, P.O. Box 22, Somerset West, 7129, South Africa. That is AWR, P.O. Box 22, Somerset West, 7129, South Africa. You can also email us using awr@sidmedia.org. That's awr@sidmedia.org.
Thanks for that reminder, Andriette. Guys, don't forget to write to us. We still have Practical Bible left. Before we get into that, however, there's a song I want you guys to listen to. It's by a group known as Heritage Singers. They're going to ask you a question. Write into us as you answer the question. Enjoy.
What will you do for Jesus? He's done so much for
Very simple question has been asked. What will you do for Jesus? We now switch over to Practical Bible, where we're going to learn more of this Jesus. So listen and enjoy.
Hi, I'm Pastor Ding. For the next couple of days, let us share together about the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Yes, we do have a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen found in the Bible. Oh, the Bible. Yes, this is a compilation of inspired word. In fact, the Bible is the very word of God. Isn't that beautiful? And we get to read it anytime we want to. The first book of the Bible is Genesis. And this is where we will find our story today. Abraham. The book of Genesis, chapter 18. We find that Abraham was visited, and the visitors who had come were actually angels. And their sole purpose for coming to this earth was to destroy the city of Sodom and Gomorrah. Oh, these were such wicked cities. In fact, the people there were so bad. You had homosexuals, you had people who just followed their heart's desires. Whatever it was that they wanted to do, they would go after it. And God wasn't happy with this. He was really displeased. So he said, you know what? These people need to learn their lesson. And so he sends these angels to come and destroy the city. Oh, but Abraham remembered that he had a relative there. Like, Lot is there and his family is there. And so when the angels had gone, Abraham was left in the presence of the Lord. And you can take this down so that you can refer to it later. It comes from Genesis chapter 18. And let us start from verse 16 going down. You will find that while Abraham was in the presence of the Lord, he decided to have a conversation with God. And he says, you know, Lord, I understand who I am and who you are, and it may not be my area, but I know you are such a loving God. Tell me, if you found 50 righteous people in the city, a loving God such as you, would you destroy the city? Oh, and God says, well, if I found 50 righteous, no, I would not destroy the city. And Abraham, well, he gets a little braver and he says, Lord, what if you found 5 less than that 50? Would you destroy the city? And God says, well, if there were those 45 people, no, I wouldn't destroy the city. And I'm sure at this point, you know, Abraham's kind of shy because, you know, he realizes that he's just human, and he's probably, you know, scratching his head, looking at the ground and saying, well, Lord, you know, this is not my place. I'm just human. But allow me to ask this. If there was 5 less, would you destroy the city? And you find that as this conversation goes on and on, Abraham keeps subtracting 5 people from there. And God keeps telling him, Abraham, if I find 30, 25, 20, until he reaches 10, he says, I will not destroy the city. But something interesting here. You read that Abraham stopped asking at number 10. But I ask a question. By the time that Abraham stopped asking, had God stopped granting? No. Abraham stopped asking before God stopped granting. There was a man who used to go around and he used to try to disprove God. Oh, God does not exist. God is not real. And so he would go to different countries and he would talk about God and telling people, you know, scientific facts on how God is not real. One day, in one of his lecture halls, and I'm telling you, it was packed full. People had heard about him. So as he was giving this lecture, at the end, as he always did, time after time, he would ask if there was anyone who would want to come up and, you know, show that there is a God. This particular day, when he asked that, from the very back of the hall, they heard footsteps and everyone went silent. And an old man carrying a basket started to make his way to the front. And when he got to the front, he took out his basket. And as he pulled out the basket, as he opened the basket, he pulled out a fruit and he started to eat it. When he finished, he asked the man, "Tell me, sir, was my fruit sweet or sour?" The man said, "How am I to know when I didn't taste it?" And he said, "So it is about my God. You cannot know if he's good or not if you have not tasted it. David writes in the Bible and he says, taste and see that the Lord is good." We need to ask from God whatever it is that we desire. Do we need money? Are we in financial difficulties? Do we need wisdom? Are we sick? Whatever help we need, it can come from God. But remember, keep asking until God continues to grant your needs.
Remember, we give you practical tips and practical advice that will help to make you healthy, wealthy, and wise. Until next time, God bless.